Mr. Hill.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tony Hill. I represent the appellant, Francisco Ocampo Pineda. You did all right with the pronunciation. This is a case where the government and I agree that the case should be remanded to the district court for further proceedings, and I think that that's an important place to start. This court's precedent as far as the fast-track case law and whether the district court could properly consider those lines of cases or not changed after the sentencing hearing in this case while this appeal was pending. I think under Reyes-Hernandez, it's important to give the district court an opportunity, given that change of law, to reconsider that argument more fully. It's not clear to what extent the district court considered that argument.
Well, a change in law, though, just what's the effect that you may become eligible for this benefit. But in order to be eligible, you have to show a lot of things which haven't been shown in this case.
Well,
just because you make this claim doesn't entitle you to resentencing automatically.
The district court did address fast track to some extent, not perhaps as much as I think both parties may have preferred, but the district court, I think, clearly said in this case that this was not a fast track sentence. I take that to mean that the argument was not fully considered, and I think that that's because the government and its position papers and its pleadings.
Well, I know, but in order to be considered, doesn't the defendant here have to make some kind of a showing that he would have been eligible for this treatment?
Well, and I think we did do that, and as I noted, I may have neglected as a matter of electronic filing to electronically file some of those supporting documents in the district court, but I do believe that I provided those to the court and that they were considered. In order to be eligible for fast track, basically the defendant has to enter a plea relatively quickly. In this case, Mr. Ocampo Pineda entered a plea on his second court appearance. He has to agree to the factual basis of the case, which he did, and he has to waive his right to appeal and his right to habeas. In this case, there was a conditional waiver of those rights that was contingent upon receiving a fast-track sentence, which was not provided here.
It's 9 weeks between before a guilty plea is entered considered fast enough in a fast-track district?
I don't know that there's the guideline memo from the Attorney General just says within a reasonable period of time. In this case, obviously, at the arraignment, I was provided some discovery. I reviewed it with my client. We pleaded guilty at the first available opportunity after receiving that basic information about the case. I don't know that we could have done it any quicker. We never requested any continuances, any extensions, did not file any pretrial motions, did nothing from the perspective of the defense to delay the case in any way, which I think is kind of the underlying principle of the fast-track disposition. The case was continued a couple of times, but that was sua sponte by the district court, so there was no continuance requested by either party to my recollection, certainly not from the defense. I think given the change in law, given the fact that I think that that is enough to establish that Mr. Ocampo Pineda is similarly situated, and if he had been in a fast-track jurisdiction, I think he would have been eligible and he would have taken full advantage of that, as any defendant, most defendants at least, would, because it's a fairly significant impact on the sentencing consideration of the court to participate in those programs when they are available.
What would his sentence have been if he'd been given consideration?
Well,
the guideline range here was he got below the guideline range, actually.
A month below the guideline
range. 41 to 50 months, he got 40.
Right.
What would the sentence have been?
I don't have my book with me, but I believe it would have been a difference of about 2 years off the sentence. I think it would have been closer to 30 months than 40. So about, or well, about, I'm sorry, about 10 months eight, off.
That's only 10-month difference. Yes. It's less than
well, a year. But 10 months is an important difference. You know, they're... In these cases, obviously, the next thing that's going to happen after he completes his federal sentence is that he's going to be deported. You know, he has a family in Mexico that he wants to return to. I think a 10-month decrease in the sentence is an important factor for him. I don't think it's so insignificant that it's not worth giving the district court the opportunity to reconsider that position and determine whether it's appropriate to give that departure under the fast-track rationale.
I don't doubt that you're correct in saying that, but you know, you put these cases in perspective. When I joined the district court in 1979, 8 years before the federal sentencing guidelines went into place, people were getting sentences all over the place, and there was never any appellate review. And you know, it's hard to say. 10-month difference is such a major consideration. He might not have got that either. There wasn't any requirement of the judge. He's got to consider the argument. He doesn't have to accept it.
And I'm not suggesting that this court needs to insist that that sentence be imposed on remand. I just think that it's something that needs to be considered. And I think, you know, a 10-month sentence here is essentially 25% off the sentence that was imposed. I think that is substantial. I mean, it could be, certainly could be more than that, could be less than that. You don't know exactly how the district court may respond. I understand that it's not, you know, half the sentence, or it's not probation instead of prison time, and I wouldn't suggest that in the district court either, but I do think that it's a substantial difference in sentence, given the sentence here and the facts of the case. Mm-hmm. The other major argument that I made in the brief, unless there are other questions about fast track, I think that this court would be well served to address the 16-point increase, given the nature of the aggravated felony in this case. Obviously, the charge here is a serious charge, something that Mr. Ocampo-Pineda pleaded guilty to approximately 10 years before the sentencing hearing. However, I think given the nature of the facts of that case, I don't think it's appropriate that a 16-level increase was imposed by the district court in the calculation of the guidelines range, because there was no showing that there was anything violent about that prior case.
By its very nature, though, Mr. Hill, because it can't be consented to by a 14-year-old, mm-hmm. Isn't that prima facie showing of...
Well, there is some language of that, and there is some language to that effect in 2L1.2, but I think it's important that there is a distinction here, and if you look at the Supreme Court's recent decision in Johnson, which was a battery case, but obviously it's a little bit different. And I can say that I practice in Florida, and I represented people in battery cases in Florida where they were charged because they threw a glass of milk in one case.
It's way different, though. It's way different because of protecting youth. We don't even go into that. It is per se a forced act, which implies violence. So we don't put victims through that determination because of laws like this. We have laws like this to avoid that. So,
well,
it seems to me you're really swimming upstream there.
Well, I may be swimming upstream. That's part of what defense lawyers do.
Rebuttal too. So.
Okay. Well.
Want to save the rest of your time?
I'll save any time I'd like to hear what the government has to say.
Right.
We can readdress this if there's nothing to add to it.
Great. Thank you. All right, Ms. Best.
May it please the Court, Yasmin Best on behalf of the United States. I want to start first with the discussion we just had about the crime of violence enhancement. First, I just want to point out the defense counsel mentioned United States versus Johnson, and there's an important distinction between that case and the case here, which is that Johnson is a case that contemplates the application of the Armed Career Criminal Act. And the definition of a crime of violence under the ACC is very distinct from what the definition of a crime of violence is under the sentencing guidelines for illegal reentry. The illegal reentry sentencing guideline application note 1 specifically notes that sexual abuse of a minor is a per se crime of violence. Going through the contemporary and ordinary definition of this defendant's previous conviction, aggravated criminal sexual abuse, where the victim was necessarily between the ages of 13 and 17, is a sexual abuse of a minor, and as such does qualify for the 16-level enhancement. So I don't believe that defense counsel's reliance on Johnson is appropriate here, and the 16-level enhancement is applicable to Mr. Ocampo-Pineda. The reason this is important also is because when one turns to the fast-track argument, there is nothing in the record to indicate that this defendant would have availed himself of a fast-track disposition.
Well, are you having second thoughts about confessing error on that?
No, not at all. Not at all. I believe that the district court should have considered it at the first instance, and the government does concede that it is probably appropriate to remand here because there is no evidence that the error would have been harmless.
Having said that, isn't it possible that you could prevail here by arguing that he wouldn't have qualified? The record doesn't suggest that he would have qualified, and that prior conviction is of such a serious nature that it might have disqualified consideration if he had pled guilty timely and waived all his rights and did all this.
Certainly, I believe that this court can affirm the defendant's conviction and find that he has not established that he would have been eligible for a fast-track disposition. I think out of an abundance of caution, the government is willing to concede because the record is very slight on that point. But I think that there is information in the record that goes to the fact that this defendant has not proven that he would have been eligible for a fast-track disposition. As I was noting, one of the issues that obviously has been sort of talked about here is whether the conviction for aggravated criminal sexual abuse would have qualified as a crime of violence. If the defendant had prevailed on that and the court had found that it's an aggravated felony, his guideline range would have been 15 to 21 months, which is a significant difference between the 41 to 51-month guideline range that was applicable here. It's unclear whether this defendant would then have agreed to a fast-track disposition where, as defendant notes in the supplemental briefing that the court asked for, a number of districts require a defendant to plead guilty and accept a 30-month sentence. Because there was no discussion of whether the defendant would agree to the government's position and probation's determination that his previous crime qualified as a crime of violence, it's unclear whether this defendant would have been willing to accept any fast-track disposition. Add onto that the fact that while defendant filed a conditional waiver at the time of his sentencing, there was no discussion of a waiver of his appellate and habeas rights during plea negotiations and before his sentencing, and so any eligibility on that point has not been established either. So it's unclear whether this defendant...
You didn't demand that as part of your demand of him.
No, the government didn't demand it, and defendant didn't offer it. That just goes to my point that this defendant would have to, the burden is on him to establish that he would have been eligible for fast-track disposition at the time of his sentencing.
But in plea negotiations, you set the terms, right? A defendant never comes in and offers to do something more than you ask for.
I wouldn't say that never happens, Your Honor. I think that there's a back and forth, certainly, between what the parties are willing to give up. And the point of a fast-track disposition is that both parties do gain some benefit, and without a defendant who is willing to give up some of his rights, his right to appeal and his habeas rights, the government also does not have the advantage of the benefits it would have received, which is evidenced by the fact that a year later we are here litigating this now. The irony of it is that more resources have been spent on this case than would have been the case in a fast-track disposition. But then again, the government didn't get the benefit of knowing this at the time the defendant pleaded guilty or at the time of his sentencing. If there are no further questions from the court, the government would ask that the court affirm the application of the crime of violence enhancement and would remand the for a hearing on fast track should the court decide that the that issue needs to be decided by the district court and there is insufficient evidence on the record.
All right, Ms. Best, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And how much time does Mr. Hill have left? 1 minute?
Just a couple of sentences. I just want to emphasize that really there was pretty full capitulation here in the plea agreement. There were no pretrial motions. There was nothing done to delay this case. And I think from that perspective, it wouldn't have taken him outside of fast-track consideration. I don't know if you have any questions. I don't have enough time to flesh out any further arguments. So I'm happy
would
to
the nature of his conviction have qualified for fast-track consideration in districts that have?
I believe it would not have affected it.
Is it the same in all the districts that have fast-track?
Well, there are a lot of differences between the districts. There are some very basic set qualifications which we've discussed. There is some variation within the districts. I don't think that you can in any way suggest that you have to qualify everywhere because I don't know how you'd be able to establish what those qualifications are because it's not public record. It is something that, you know, the U.S. attorney could provide, but I'm limited in my ability to answer those questions.
It ultimately depends at all upon what's provided in each district, right?
That's true.
And it becomes a little speculative which district your guy would have been caught in. If he would qualify for, say, half of them but not the other half, then
well, and
get the benefit of that as well.
I know that I'm over time. I think that
sure. Hey, you can go on.
My answer to that is that it's something that the district court can consider. And some of the districts, he might have gotten 2 points. Some of the districts, he might have gotten 4 points off. The district court should be allowed to determine if 4 points is appropriate, 2 points is appropriate, no points is appropriate. But that's something that you shouldn't have to worry too much about. You should let the district court do that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hill. Was this a private case or an appointed case?
Appointed case.
Okay, and I wanted to express the gratitude of the court for you taking this case and vigorously advocating for your client. Thank you, and thank you to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement. Thank you.